Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're going to get to your Twitter questions in our final segment. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We're also going to have Pat Murray joining us in a few minutes. He's still just coming off doing some post-practice stuff. So while we wait on him, we're going to go ahead and get to the news of the day. But you can also send in questions for him as well using that same hashtag BucksLive. So after practice, I know that there was some discussion about Jameis, which is always the hot topic, even though obviously the way he played last week made it look like he was great. I think there's still been some concern a little bit.
Well, I'm sure there was concern outside the building whenever the team's starting quarterback is not throwing on Wednesday and Thursday, but this was all planned ahead of time. It's gone exactly as the coaching staff expected. And it could continue to be this way for a few more weeks, potentially. Coach Cutter said he doesn't foresee it being a permanent thing. He hopes it's not a permanent thing, you know, for the rest of the season, but it's possible. And he says he's not particularly worried about not throwing on Wednesday and Thursday, throwing off the rhythm of the offense. And obviously, it didn't last week. That was, according to Coach Cutter, that was one of Jameis's best games in his career, and maybe the second half was maybe his best half he's ever seen him play. So, and, you know, we had 384 yards and three touchdowns, and you know, one decision he regretted that led to an interception, but it was a fantastic game. So you shouldn't really have to worry about the quarterback position this week. There are some worries. But
there are some worries, especially in the injury front, which we're still going to have to wait for the final injury report
for most of it
to come out for a lot of it. But we did get a little bit of news.
Yeah, we do know that, and not surprisingly, Robert McClain is not going to play. He is in the concussion protocol, and he hasn't been cleared. So he is out. We also know that Josh Robinson's missed a couple games with concussion. We don't know yet on him. Brent Grimes didn't practice the last couple days. We're sort of waiting on word on him. Ryan Russell could potentially return because he's been limited in practice. So, you know, there's little things we're still going to learn in a couple hours, but at least we do know, unfortunately, Robert McClain is out, which would lead you to believe, based on what Coach said earlier in the week, that that Vernon Hargreaves would probably move back out to the outside.
And so then JV and Elliott would be the one called upon to step up there as compared to maybe keeping Vernon in the slot and bringing Ryan Smith in.
I think so, because I think they view JV and Elliott specifically as a nickelback. And Ryan Smith, I think they've really just trained him on the outside, not in the slot. So if, like we said, Brent Grimes is a question mark until we find out later today and potentially on Sunday, if you needed to replace Brent Grimes, presumably Ryan Smith would be that guy again like he was earlier in the season. So, yeah, I think you would probably move Hargreaves back out to the outside in that situation.
Okay, so looking at the Carolina offense and the fact that we could potentially have multiple corners out there that have not been getting big chunks of playing time this season, where do you see that falling and how that could affect it?
Well, I think that's a concern against any team whatsoever, no matter what you look at the stat sheet and see. I mean, you know, the stat sheets didn't suggest that the Bills would pass for a lot of yards, but they did reasonably well. They didn't totally light it up, but they had more explosive plays than you would expect. So, you know, if you can't get pressure on the quarterback, which has been a problem for us of late, I think any quarterback would be in position to, you know, be licking his chops a little bit and facing a secondary that's down a couple guys. But, you know, that's why you have extra players. That's why you have depth. And then a lot of times they step up and do great. So we'll see. But you would be concerned. They have – the thing about the Panthers offense, it's a little bit like ours in that Cam, this year at least, Cam's really spreading the ball around a lot. They don't have Greg Olsen, so that's not a guy he's throwing eight passes to a game. He's throwing a lot of passes to Christian McCaffrey. But then Devin Funchess and Kelvin Benjamin are pretty equal in what they're getting, targets and catches. And Ed Dixon's been pretty good for them, filling in for Greg Olsen. So they really throw the ball around a lot.
And looking, it seems like big plays, though, have been a bit of a struggle for them, both running and passing, that it's been a lot of these short yardage things. And is that more or less conducive to when you have some, you know, newer guys in the secondary, maybe? Do you think that just the way that they've been playing offensively, that could be at least a little bit of a help that they're not doing these huge bombs? Or,
well, I mean, you obviously don't want to give up huge bombs. I would suggest that the state of the Panthers offense is about what people were expecting after the offseason moves that brought in guys like McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel and saw Ted Ginn leave. You probably thought that this would, well, most of the analysts suggested that the Panthers would be trying to add a little bit more of a quick hitting type part of their passing attack, which they really haven't done a lot of compared to other teams in the past, but they have also been quite good at throwing the ball downfield. And obviously, when Cam Newton moves around and can stop and throw with that arm of his, that's a real great way to create big plays. But this year, they don't have a lot of big plays yet in the passing game. They don't have a lot of big plays, period, to be honest with you. But they are, like, Cam Newton's completion percentage is way up. It's his career best by a long shot. I mean, he's a career 59% passer, and this year he's throwing at 64%. So that tells you they're throwing shorter, higher percentage passes and trying to get more yards after that by play design. And I know that's why they want McCaffrey. And I think, you know, Coach Cutter, I was talking to Coach Cutter yesterday, and he told me he had heard the Panthers coach, Ron Rivera, answering a question about McCaffrey and saying they really haven't gotten the big plays out of him yet, but they think they're very close. So right now he's
bad
averaging
news when we are playing them very close.
Yes, exactly. It's a, kind of what Coach Cutter said. I mean, no, the stats wouldn't suggest you they have a lot of big plays, but they're maybe this close to unlocking that. Right now, McCaffrey's averaging like 2.5 yards a carry and 7 yards a rush, I mean, a reception. And I know they want both those numbers to be significantly higher than that.
Right. So let's flip it on the other side. Bucks offense versus Carolina defense. It looks like these are kind of something's going to have to give because the Bucks are leading in yards, passed especially. Okay. And then you have the Panthers who are, you know,
high
third, that are very high up there in terms of total defense.
I think Buffalo has a fantastic defense too. And it didn't really slow down Jameis very much. It just, I think you're to the point with this offense now where you don't have to necessarily worry about it week to week based on who we're facing. I think this offense, when it's clicking, can probably move the ball against anybody. That's to the point where I think we've gotten to. Mm-hmm. And so just because Carolina's yards per game allowed looks a little bit more forbidding than maybe like the Saints next week, I'm not concerned that our offense is going to struggle. They seem to be just getting in stride, and hopefully that's going to continue. One thing that could make a big difference, as we were discussing injuries and what we're going to find out later today, is whether or not Luke Kuechly plays. I mean, there's simply not many more players in the entire league that are bigger impact defensive players than Luke Kuechly. So having him in there versus not having him in there is obviously a huge difference.
Yeah, that's very, very true. So especially looking at potentially the passing game that has looked so good in recent weeks, especially against Bills, we talked about, you know, what a great game Jameis had. What are the people that you really think against this Carolina defense could have a huge game?
Well, you know, we have the most productive pair of tight ends in the league, so you'd like to lean on that. But they've actually been a pretty good defense against tight ends this year. Their cornerbacks have played a lot better this year. You know, this is their second year for both Bradbury and Worley, and they're playing better, but still you would hope that maybe those inexperienced guys, they're both 6'1", so they can match up pretty well with Mike Evans' type. So I would think you'd probably have a better chance of hitting your outside guys, Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson, this week.
All right, we still have two more segments coming up. One is getting to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive, and we'll be right back.
I don't know nobody's going to let another man walk in their house and take something from them. Don't take that to heart. This is personal to me.
Now takes the snap, looks to his right, look, crossing route, throw, caught ball, touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hit the back drop. It's a Lavonte David quarterback sack, his second of the game.
Let's make it count. We're past the 50, okay?
Big Winston looking. James is going to run to the left of the 10. He throws to the inside. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Attack, technique, and takeaways. Got it?
It's picked off. Intercepted to the 30. To the 25, to the 20. Juan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Welcome back into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. Now we are joined by our very special guest, Pat Murray. Pat, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You were saying that you have never been live before until this very moment.
No.
In some respects, though, you've always been live.
Yes.
A little shaky now.
All right. Actually,
that leads me right into my first question. I think we can all see from, like, when you talk to the media and your demeanor on the field that you're confident, mm-hmm. which is an important thing for a kicker. What I want to know is, do you think you were always confident and that helped you become a good kicker, or you built confidence through performing well?
Truly, I think I built confidence through the work ethic that I have,
okay.
and the work ethic that has been instilled in me by my parents. Mm-hmm. Being out on that field and kicking from every position that you could possibly kick in during a game in practice built that confidence within myself to go out and do it during the game.
You talked about your dad a lot when you came back here. He really helped you when you were trying to get a job back in the league, right?
He's helped me really from the day I was born. I think if you ask him, I was probably kicking a ball before I could walk, and he's been instrumental in the way that I kick the ball and getting me back to, you know, where mm-hmm. I can compete at the highest level. So he's the guy you got to thank, that's for sure.
He has some expertise, or just the fact that he worked with you?
Well, he played soccer and Gaelic
okay.
football growing up in Ireland,
okay.
and he never kicked in American football, and just decided that his kids would be kickers one day, and it worked out pretty well.
Nice.
Yeah, and I don't know how many people know that part of your history and the Irish side of it, which, first of all, I feel like your Irish accent came out more talking about it. Like, when you just mentioned Gaelic football, it was, like, one of the first times I feel like I've really heard you have a little bit of an accent,
you know,
which is pretty great.
It's funny. Like, I can turn it on if I want
to. Nice.
I would do that all the time if I were you.
It's funny. Like, you'd be out, and you just turn it on, and then I can turn it off and talk normal.
Nice.
That's so awesome.
Can you do any other accents or just that one?
Just that one.
No, just that one. Just that one.
But, yeah, so explain a little bit about your family history and the Gaelic football thing and, mm-hmm. and what that is.
Sure. Well, my two uncles played at the highest level of Gaelic football you can play.
Wow.
Now, Gaelic football is an amateur sport. These guys go to work Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, whatever they do. And then they go play for their county on Sunday. The county is like a state in Ireland. So you're playing for the county that you were born in. There's no draft. There's no let me get traded to this team and play for this team because they're better. It doesn't work like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about pride of where you're from.
That's cool.
My dad played growing up, but he didn't play at the highest level. However, he, in my opinion, could have been a professional soccer player. The guy's
wow.
56 years old at this stage. And he's amazing what he can do
That's
with
awesome.
Football.
That's
he can kiss,
cool.
still kick 40-yard field goals, 50-yard
no
punts. Oh,
wow.
yeah, this guy can play. We'll have to get him on video
yeah,
one time.
Yeah, we need to do this.
You punted in college, too, didn't you?
I did. I was actually a better punter than I was kicker.
Really?
Yeah, I was 2-time All-American.
I knew that. I just figured it was as a kicker.
No, that was
wow.
as a punter.
Oh,
I was my senior year, I was an All-American kicker and punter.
Oh, okay.
Punting for me was more natural because that's the motion in Gaelic football. It's
okay.
all punting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I grew up doing, and that's what was most natural for me.
Well, you hopefully won't need to do that on the field, but it's a nice thing for a team to have. If your punter were to get a minor injury in the middle of a game,
sure.
you can
yeah,
step in there
I,
and do
I
it.
I did it in preseason my rookie year, and that was fun.
Okay, recall that.
But Brian's pretty good.
Yes, he is.
I think we'll let him
Have
guess.
You ever trash-talked with him saying, you know, that you want to go up against him in practice or something?
I thought about doing it, and then I saw him hit a 5-4
yeah.
hang-time punt, and I was
yeah.
like,
no.
Nah,
no, I'm good. I'm all right. No need to trash-talk
no.
about that.
He's good.
When you came out of Fordham, I know that I think here was the first place you signed in late December, right?
Yes.
Had you had other opportunities, or was that it? Did you have to wait for that?
I was in rookie minicamp with the Bears
okay.
for 3 days and then was released. And then I worked out for the Giants, the Bucks twice before I actually signed, and the Jets as well.
Did you wonder at any time if this was going to happen? Because a lot of kickers have to go through that kind of start before they're
Sure. Yeah, there was always, a thought in my mind that it wouldn't happen. But my focus was never on I'm going to play football and that's it. That's why I went to Fordham, so I could get a quality
yeah,
education,
okay.
get a quality degree. And I was all set to go work on Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to give myself the opportunity to pursue this dream, and I wanted to allow the people that have helped me get here
mm-hmm.
come along on this journey with me, and fortunately it's worked out.
Yeah, and you've had an interesting journey, especially the last
yeah,
year or so.
You can say that.
Great was that to finally get to feel like that full circle thing of coming back here and getting to go back into a game recently for the first time in more than a year?
It's exciting. It really is. I think this time, because of the past year and a half, 2 years that I've had, and coming back to this place that gave me my first real opportunity just makes it that much more special, and I'm really looking forward to the next 10 weeks.
You're 6 of 7 here on field goals of 50 or more yards, including your very first one this year.
Mm-hmm.
How much different is the approach when you're trying to kick a, say, a 54-yarder than a 45-yarder?
Truthfully, there's not a different approach. I take an extra point the same way that I would take a 50-yard field goal. Mm-hmm. The difference would be if there was a wind to factor in. In Buffalo, there was a little bit of a headwind against us, so that adjusted the kick slightly.
Really?
But all things considered, say if we're playing in a dome, I'm hitting an extra point like I'm hitting a 50-yard field goal.
Mm-hmm.
For me, nothing changes.
It seems like there is a lot more to kicking than people realize, even just things like that. I'm talking about like the wind and maybe the temperature and, mm-hmm. and things like that. So what are all the things you have to factor in for a game and with you personally that you have to, in that moment, be thinking about?
Sure. Well, the first thing is, as soon as we get to the stadium, I get dressed and I go out and I look around, pick my aiming spots behind the goalposts at different yardages.
Hmm.
So when I get out there and start kicking, I know exactly where I'm aiming and I can base the wind off of, okay, I'm hitting it at this spot. It's going to move 3 footballs. I put like 18 or 19 footballs in the goalpost.
Okay.
That's my image.
Okay.
And I say, okay, it's going to move 3 footballs to the left, 3 footballs to the right.
Hmm.
So then in the game, I know if I put it here, it's going to go through the uprights here and I'm going to be good to go.
Wow. That's cool.
That is really cool.
When you were here in 2014, am I right? Was that still Michael Kanin was still the punter?
Yes, he was.
So he was kicking off at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're kicking off.
Mm-hmm.
Did you prefer either one, having to do it or not having to do it?
I like being on the field more.
Okay.
Yeah, I love kicking off. It's one of the things that I did really well in college, and I'm really excited to do it here. We got Nate Katzer as our special teams coordinator. He puts us in great positions, and I just love putting my foot on the ball.
It seems like our philosophy on kickoffs, and some teams look to be different, is to try to get a touchback as often as possible. But I imagine you've practiced mortar-style kicks or whatever.
We've practiced everything, and different situations will call for different kicks. Maybe in Lambeau in December it's going to call for a different kick. Maybe this week it'll call for a different kick because there might be a little breeze.
Yeah.
It just all depends on the conditions of the day.
How do you determine, like you said that about, oh, it'll, because of the wind it'll move 3 footballs to the left, like, that feels like a lot of math almost that you're having to factor in, or is it just like you've done it enough that you just kind of know? Like, how do you determine that when you make that decision?
I've done it enough, and I know my kick. I know the flight of the ball, and I know when I hit it pure, this is what it's going to do. Yeah, I guess there's some math involved as well. I mean, kicking is all about geometry.
Yeah.
It's about angles, and it's about how you strike
the
ball. But, you know, for me, it's a feel thing more than anything, and I'd rather it be that way. I don't like to be too robotic.
I think one of the underappreciated jobs in all football is as the holder.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, that's Brian,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You agree?
Trash talk to him now that we think about this.
Exactly.
I mean, you got to put a lot of trust in that guy.
I do.
To me, that looks hard. I don't know. You guys are so good at it. You've done it so many times. But to me, that looks like one of the hardest things because you got to do so much in just a split second.
He's perfect.
Yeah.
Truthfully, he's perfect every single time. And he notices little things with my swing, and he can adjust the football based on that.
Wow.
Wait.
It's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. Like in the moment, or like, oh, he's been doing this game, so this is what I need to do?
He's been doing this week in practice.
Okay.
We've talked about it. We can make adjustments based on that.
Maybe tilt or?
Yeah. A little bit of an angle on the football, how he tilts it, more toward him, a little less toward him. He's been perfect so far, and he gets it down perfectly. We get our operation done really well.
Yeah.
I'm excited to work with him.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. I already thought that job was hard. No, I didn't even realize the level of
even
precision.
Even more impressive.
What's the amount of time it's supposed to be from the moment Garrison snaps it to when the ball's kicked?
We're going under 1.3 seconds,
1.3.
Like 1.28, 1.27.
And how much off of that would it cost you? Because you see all the time that guy rushing up the edge and diving, and he misses by this much.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's 1.5, is he going to get that?
Oh, every time.
Wow.
So pretty much every time he's
literally
going to get
a couple.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how precise this whole action is, the whole play.
It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. And then, you know, everybody always talks about the mental side of being a kicker, and I've always thought it, you know, it seems especially difficult because of how long it is between kicks.
Yeah.
That everybody else, you know, has a bad play and they're immediately on to the next snap. So for you, what's your process between kicks, either not getting too high or too low, or, you know, just do you just try to move on and forget it even happened or whatever?
It's funny. People ask me this all the time. I don't remember the kicks that I take, truthfully.
Okay, good.
I move on to the next kick immediately. I take the mentality of being a sniper. A sniper takes one shot, hits his mark, moves on to the next shot. Now, you can learn from previous kicks, and I do sometimes do that, but for the most part, I move on to the next kick like it never even happened.
Awesome. It's like selective amnesia.
Pretty much.
That's pretty awesome. Very cool. All right, well, Pat, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck this Sunday. And, you know, we have a streak here where people that come on our show have a really amazing game, the next game. So we're thinking like a 68-yarder, you know, nothing too major.
As long as we get the win, I'm good.
Then we're good. I like it. All right, we still have one more segment. Getting to your Twitter questions. Use that hashtag BucksLive to send those in, and we'll be right back.
Gerald McCoy's going to wrap up Ryan and sack him at the 45. That is super quick, Gerald McCoy.
Here's the snap, and Winston dropping to the hook up pressure. Winston avoids it and rolls out to the right side, still looking. Silly, he's back in his own end zone. Look out, Davis. Got a block. Winston running, got a block again. He's still alive. Throws the ball downfield. He's got Mike Evans, and he goes to bench the catch at the 38-yard line. What a play by Jameis Winston.
There's a snap. Breeze, three steps back. He loads the long ball. That is knocked away, and it's picked off at the 29. Picked off by the Buccaneers. Vernon Hargreaves has his first career interception.
Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. Time for our final segment, which is getting to your Twitter questions. Keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive.
I liked having a guy who could do impressions on.
Yeah.
Or accents.
Now we have to ask everybody if they can do that. Like, that's
can
our new requirement. Yeah, but not
on
live
programming. Come on. What is it? At least tell us what it is.
I mean, I can do, like British. Well, I can definitely do Southern. I mean, being from the South, like, yeah, anytime
I can't
you can't do anything?
No.
I can definitely.
I can do things. I just can't do accents.
You can't
you
do anything.
Swept that with a broad brush.
Any
there.
Accents is how I should have phrased that. But yeah, the Southern accent.
So you're not going to do the British accent for us?
I mean,
all right. Fine.
Yeah, okay. I'll think about it another show.
Test
maybe.
Test it out and see if we can
I'll,
do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'll test it out another time when I'm more prepared. All right, our first question comes from Brandon, and I think you're probably going to roll your eyes at this question, but
I'll just do it now.
Don't shoot the messenger is basically what I'm saying. Should we bring in Simeon Rice?
No, of course not. and I honestly don't think any of the people that are interviewing him and disseminating this really believe it either. It's just entirely possible that Simeon believes it because he is a very confident man who was an extraordinarily good football player. And if anybody could do it at age 43, I think, mm-hmm. you know, he would be it. But
right.
this is – he's been out of the league for a decade now. And so in no way would I ever say anything that I intended to be disrespectful for Simeon Rice, one of the all-time Buccaneer greats. But no, of course not.
Right.
But he cares. He wants the Bucs defense to get better. I know that.
Well, and here's the other half of it. Both Brandon and another account called Bucs Report both asked about what about bringing him in to coach.
Well, I mean, has that been part of it?
I think
he just wanted to come back and play.
He did want to come back and play, but I think that's their question is, does he seem like someone that would be a good coach based on his experience?
Well, I mean, I think anytime you have somebody who's an expert in a field, they surely have information that they can share with people who are trying to make it in that same field. And I know during training camp, in fact, I think it was caught by the Hard Knocks cameras, he was here a couple days, mm-hmm. and he worked with some of the young pass rushers. I'm sure they appreciated that and got stuff out of it. I don't have any idea if Simeon Rice would be a good coach or not, and I don't think I've ever seen or heard him express interest in that type of job, which would be the first thing.
Right.
A lot of people who were great players, especially if they made a good living and don't necessarily need to do something else, don't really want to get into coaching because it's a lot of hours. And
it
some
is.
Guys have a passion for it.
Right.
I mean, we have former coaches on our staff. I mean, former players on our staff, and we have before, like Hardy Nickerson last year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a passion for it, sure. But if you don't necessarily have a passion for it, it's an awful lot of work.
And also, I mean, Jay Hayes is considered one of the – top D-line coaches.
We have a good one.
In the league. And so, yeah, I think that it's not an area that we feel we have, you know, lacking in, right. in coaching. So, all right, the Jimenez family says, I understand subs on D for situations, but do you think players not getting in on certain plays hurts their groove, the rhythm of the game?
Well, I mean, I think we need to know. I don't think it's a weird question. I'm sure we're getting all these questions, and it's unavoidable because of how poorly the defense has been playing, right? So people are searching for reasons why. I don't think the Bucs have unusual substitution patterns, though, except, of course, potentially at safety. A lot of teams are only playing two guys. We're playing right. some games three, some games four. And I suppose, yes, you could make the argument that at safety, that could be the case. However, Mike Smith said the reason that we are trying to use all of them, at least for now, is they have different types of skill sets. So there's game situations and specific play and formations where one of them might be better suited for it than the other. So I think that's why you're seeing it at safety. But at defensive end, everybody in the league likes to rotate those guys if they've got the depth to do so. And at linebacker, we're really just trying to play our main three guys now that they're all healthy. So I think that would only apply to safety. I would say it's possible, but I wouldn't put that as anywhere near one of the main reasons why the defense is struggling.
Okay. And Mark wanted to know, with the third down defense struggling a little bit, is it about them being at a more of a third and long versus third and short? Is it the situation mm-hmm. or is it the actual execution on third down?
It's execution. And that's unfortunate, really, because if you could break it down like that and say, well, listen, we're doing okay on third and five and third and 10. It's just we're giving up too many short third downs. Then it'd be pretty easy to pinpoint what was the problem, because almost every team, their percentage of third downs successes allowed drops. If you break it up like 1-3 and 4-6 mm-hmm. and 7-10, yeah, it goes down, and logically you would expect that it would. But unfortunately, the Buccaneers are struggling in all types of third downs. And, you know, when you talk about third down defense, and we said this earlier in the week, in essence, most of the time you're just talking about defense. You know, a breakdown on third down isn't really that much difference than a breakdown on first down. It's just more painful because that's when you need that stop to get off the field. There are some specific execution things, and like I said before, third down is probably most important time when you want to get that pass rush, because in most third downs you know they're passing. And so you don't have to worry about figuring out first and then going to get the quarterback. You can, as they say, pin your ears back and go. So if you're not getting any pressure on third down, that's a bigger problem.
Okay. John wants to know, because we might have some substitute corners in, what could change about the rest of the defense to try to help that position group?
I don't suppose anybody's going to ask us about the offense, are they?
Apparently not.
It's such a good topic
right
now.
I know,
I mean, would it be off topic to answer that question by saying, hey, we have the best passing attack in the a little bit?
I mean, hey, go for it.
Yeah. Well, you can read all. I wrote all about that yesterday. So if you want to read happy stuff about how good our offense is and how
happy
it looks.
Thoughts.
You're right. And it hasn't really probably hit its stride yet. So it's going to do even more. But, okay, the topic right now is the defense is struggling. And can we help those corners? To some extent, but not that much.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're down two of them. I mean, if you're missing one of your two top cornerbacks, I suppose you could game plan to give the other one a little more help. But if you're missing two of them, how can you really cover both of them?
Right.
The answer, again, and I'm sounding like a broken record, is you can always help your secondary by reducing the amount of time that the quarterback has to look at the field. And so that's pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer to how the Buccaneers, who are last in the league in sacks, get a better pass rush. They're trying. They're trying. They brought, you know, unfortunately Noah Spence is done for the year. That's not going to help. They did bring in Darryl Tapp, who they say is a veteran, knows what he can do, so he can step right in and at least be solid. You know, I'm sure they're trying schematically to do different things, and they're teaching them up, trying to get better execution out of them. So hopefully all of it comes together to get some at least incremental improvement in the pass defense. I mean, the pass rush, and that, of course, is what will help the secondary.
All right, we do have one question about the awesome offense.
Oh,
it
great.
Is sort of in relation to the defense, though. It's the question is from Katie saying, should the offense have a little bit more of a two-minute drill feel to it, knowing that the defense might be struggling? I think just the idea of trying to score even more potentially, does it change the offensive game plan knowing that the defense might be struggling?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather see a long drive. A long drive that ends up with points is going to keep your defense off the field longer. So, you know, you're not going to turn down a quick strike score, of course.
Right.
But, no, I don't think that would cause you to try to move faster on offense. And basically, essentially the question is saying, should you play like, what was that Loyola Marymount basketball team that run and shoot would score like 160, 150 right. because they just didn't play defense. They just tried to outscore them. I don't think that would work in football.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us on this edition of Buccaneers Insider Live presented by Miller Lite. Have a safe and fun weekend. We'll see you 75 minutes before kickoff on Sunday.